Listen and engage. Listen and engage. This is the next generation of KGO 810.
I'm John Rothman in for Drex right here on KGO. Yes, indeed. I will be back tomorrow night. And, of course, I'm delighted to be behind this microphone. 800-810. I want to go to Michael calling from Mill Valley. Michael, I see from the note here you have a very interesting observation, and I'd love to hear it. Fire away.
Yes, John. I'm a film student, and I'm 61 years old. And I think there's so much violence that's coming through our cinema these days that the kids, these children coming up, seeing things on TV, the movies, they're so numb to what gun violence is because there's so much of it. They don't know that that guns are not toys. And I think that's one of the problems. And the solution that I would think is Hollywood and cinema in general has to look at themselves deep and try to come up with a solution, because they have children too. And these kids are getting slaughtered all over the United States with these damn guns.
Well, I have to tell you, it's very interesting you should say that. It's very interesting you should say that. And I want to make the observation, when I was a kid, I watched The Lone Ranger, or I watched Superman, or Have Gun Will Travel. I watched what I thought were really benign, Sky King, you know. These were very benign kind of things. Today, when my kids watch television, I'm horrified by the violence that occurs. But now I want to ask you a First Amendment question. Can we dictate that certain things can't be shown on television?
Good question. Where is the line? Where's the balance?
That's what I'm asking you.
I don't have an answer. I can't answer that.
And you know what I realized too? I can censor when my kids were little. I can't do it anymore. They're 23 and 18. But when my kids were little, I could censor what they saw. But they would go to a friend's house, and they would see these things on television, and I was horrified. Or even a movie. You know, the violence in movies is unbelievable. All you have to do is watch previews these days at a movie theater. And you're right. People become immune, don't they? Yep, it's a toughie. Thank you, Michael, for your call. Let's go to Harold. Harold is calling us from Morgan Hill. Harold, welcome to KGO.
How you doing?
I'm great.
Yeah, first of all, I just want to add my condolences to the family. I am just really sad to hear what happened to this young man. And most importantly, you know, especially the gentleman before, he was very just despondent, and I can just hear it in his voice that he was sad, he was hurt. But coming from a criminal justice perspective, you know, I worked in the juvenile justice system and counseling and worked with youth for many years in the juvenile justice system. But when it comes to the issue of violence in youth, We're at the crossroads in our society, and I think we have become immune to violence. I think there are really no viable solutions at this point, because it's a much more deeply rooted social issue. And I don't think you have all these people, these experts, these PhDs, and these folks that think they have solutions and answers. But the real key is that we have to dig much deeper within ourselves to come to some kind of viable solution to solving this issue of violence, because I think it's becoming more progressive.
Let me ask you a question. Harold, I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
You use the term immune to violence. Why do you think we are immune to violence? What's happened?
Well, because I think because from a psychological perspective, we as a society, we're traumatized with violence. We're so traumatized, and I'm talking not at the local, but it's at the higher up. Every day, there's someone in this society is murdered or killed, and this young man that was killed in San Francisco was just out, just going about his way. But the my concern is the issue with the person who committed the act. Did he have any psychological issues? Was he angry? Was he mad? Was he frustrated? Did he just take it out on this young man of what was really troubling him? You know, so it's a really deeply rooted social issue. And, you know, having worked with youth all my life, over 30 years, understanding and dealing with the gang issues, growing up and witnessing violence, particularly in the city of Compton, where I grew up.
Compton in Southern California, everybody should know, Compton, in Los Angeles.
Yes,
yep.
That's where I'm from. I'm from L.A. I'm from Compton. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, we're going back, you know, buku years, but I don't think that we're committed. We're really, truly committed. You have all these people that form these committees and say, we're going to stop violence. We got violence prevention program. But where are the answers? Where is it coming from?
You know, that's the reason I posed the question. One of the problems that we have in our society is that there are very often questions for which we have no answers. Whether it has to do with the innocent young man being killed, whether it has to do with people putting gummy bears laced with drugs, whether it is, well, you name it. And it is disturbing, and it is hard to understand it. And maybe there is no rationalization. When we talked earlier this evening about child prostitution, how could any such thing happen? And the simple truth is that we live in a world in which there is a tremendous amount of injustice. Now, the one thing we can do on this radio program is to shine a spotlight on some of these things. Maybe to consider where we're going, what we're doing. And that's what I hope we are talking about tonight. I don't think there's any solution, but I think discussing it is critical. I want to thank you all for your calls. We have another half an hour, and I want to move on to another subject, and I want to set it up for you because it's so important. Okay, everybody, take out your checkbook, okay? Because you're going to buy a house tonight, or you're going to buy a condo tonight. And here's my question for you. There is a building here in San Francisco, the Millennium Towers. It's a spectacular building, and I don't think you can get into it for under $1.5 million. So it's expensive. Okay, put away your checkbook. I'm not asking you to write a check tonight. But here's my question for you. Turns out that the Millennium Towers has sunk 16 inches and is tilting. And what do you do about it? If you spent $1.5 million or more and you're living in a building which is sinking and tilting, the Leaning Tower of San Francisco, what do you do? By the way, do you sue the developer? Do you sue the city? What do you do? And I'm asking the question because the Millennium Towers here in San Francisco is tilting and sinking, and one of the residents blames poor design for the tower's shift, while its developers say the structure remains safe. If you lived in a building that was sinking and tilting, would you feel safe? And by the way, if you'd spent $1 million to live in a luxury apartment, how would you be feeling? The Chronicle headline was sort of funny. It said SF Leaning Towers troubles haven't peaked. They haven't toppled either. But it's a simple question. If you had purchased a building or an apartment in a building and it started to sink and tilt, what would you do? By the way, some owners in the Millennium Towers have filed legal claims against, well, we'll talk about that. 800-810-810. That's the number right here on KGO. I'm John Rothman, just tilting for more discussion right here on KGO.